Hi and welcome to Home Education for All, or HEFA for short. At HEFA, we believe that community is the heart of home education, and so that's what we built. We built a community in the UK, helping, supporting and uplifting each other to be the best home educators we can be. And now we're coming to you via this podcast too. Stay tuned for all things home education in the UK via our amazing, experienced, knowledgeable and often hilarious team. We truly believe home education can be for everyone, and we hope listening here will give you the confidence or knowledge you need if you've been considering home education. Let's dive in. Welcome back to HEFA. So this week I am joined by the wonderful Izzy Speller, a fellow home educator, social worker, and someone who I'm very jealous of right now because they have just moved. And the view from where she is talking from today is literally the mountains. So yeah, thanks for that.
That helps feel chilled, doesn't it? Also, it helps me jump on board having an interview and being the only person who hasn't actually seen the questions in advance.
So. I love that. For those of you listening, I've had illness in my house this week, so I hadn't been able to get a podcast recorded in advance. So I kind of scrabbled around and went, "Who's free?" And Izzy very kindly, despite having moved a couple of days ago, said, "I'll do it." So thank you, Izzy.
No worries, it's my pleasure.
Okay, so let's dive in. How long have you been home educating?
I've done two sort of bouts of home education because I've got quite a big gap between my two biological children of 10 years. So my eldest, I did about 6 months when he was maybe 12. Because school was really not working for him. He was being really badly bullied. It was really knocking his confidence. Teachers weren't responding to those behaviours appropriately. There was lots of mixed messages, and that was really undermining who he was. So I pulled him out. We spent 6 months sort of rebuilding him and looking at what he wanted to do, and then found a different school that was suitable for him. And he went back to that after 6 months. With my youngest, so probably about 10 years later, my youngest, just after COVID, his behaviour started to change quite significantly. He was going through an acceleration of sort of identity formation, I suppose, after COVID, and was quite confused. And his behaviour changed at home. So I was contacting the school that he was at frequently and saying, "Something's changed. I'm not sure what's wrong. I can just sense something's not right. What's going on in lessons, blah, blah, blah." And they were saying, "No, nothing wrong, no problems." He'd never even had a detention. And then out of the blue one day, he was excluded.
Excluded,
fully excluded, never even had a detention. And he was fully excluded, permanently excluded from the school. He had tried to impress other people. He'd found some cannabis in a little bag round at the park. He'd carried this cannabis around with him for a few days. Lots of gossip had sort of grown around that. He'd offered to sell it to various people. Obviously he didn't have enough to sell it to all the different people that he was promising it to, but he kind of presented this view of being, "Oh, I'm a really hard drug dealer." Well, obviously there was no evidence of that because he'd never even used it. He didn't even smoke it because he was like, "If I smoke it, I won't have any to show anyone." So it was absolutely about this identity formation, but the school just weren't willing to discuss that. And actually, having seen their responses to that and their lack of care when I was raising concerns prior to that incident, and the way that they handled that incident, they had an allegation made that I had provided him with that cannabis, and they wouldn't tell me who, they were telling me that they knew who had provided it to him, but they wouldn't tell me. And I'm saying, this is a safeguarding issue. If somebody's providing my child with drugs, I need to know about it. And they wouldn't tell me. And it wasn't until when I took it to appeal, and I only appealed it not because I wanted him to go back to the school, but just because I wanted to hold them to account in front of independent people. And it was when I took it to appeal and said, how ridiculous that you would hold, you would not share that information with me when I'm supposed to be safeguarding my child. And they then said, well, it was you gave him the cannabis. And I said, and I'm a qualified social worker and you know that. So have you reported that? No, you haven't. Right. So you haven't heard the appropriate. So why have you not reported that to somebody? Why have I not been investigated for providing children with drugs? And they just didn't want to discuss that any further, and they wouldn't have any further communication with me.
Wow.
So we were then offered other schools, including schools where I was being pulled in as a consultant to help them change the culture of their staffing so that they could deal with children more appropriately in a more trauma sort of focused and child-led way. So having sort of got that inside information about what was going on in other schools, there was no way I was going to put my child back into that. And thankfully I happened upon a group where Pip and Paula were very outspoken and really sort of grabbed my attention. And they really opened up to my eyes to the idea that actually this wasn't necessarily a bad thing, that this was an opportunity that had risen. And that given the kind of child that Marley is, that getting him to understand that who he was good enough was the key underpinning thing for him, really. So we spent probably, I mean, they accepted the report, the LA, but we fundamentally spent a year kind of just working on him developing that kind of sense of aspiration, the wanting to do stuff again. So for the first 2 months, he slept. Which I think we hear that quite a lot, don't we?
We do.
And as a social worker, I know that he came out of a traumatic situation. He was then safe. His body relaxed. We notice that with adults when we go on holiday, when we stop or when we move to the mountains. Suddenly, we become very calm and we relax, and our bodies allow us to feel very sleepy and catch up. Because it's a very vulnerable place to be if you fall asleep. So developmentally, I knew that that was the right thing for him to do. And I let him do that for those 2 months quite comfortably. Whereas I think a lot of parents find that a really uncomfortable thing to do, especially when you're considering all the time, you know, we're going to have to at some point write a report about what we've been doing. And I can't put that he's been laying in bed for 2 months, you know.
Yeah.
There were other things that we were doing at the same time, but it wasn't necessarily academically focused. That came later. And he's come to the end of his home education now. He turned 16 yesterday, Monday rather, and he's got a very clear plan about what he wants to do. He wants to join the army, which is completely against all of my ethics. I'm a pacifist. I'm anti-army. I'm anti-war. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for humanity. But that's what he wants to do, and so I've had to support him to do it. And so we've looked into that in great detail, and he's now signing up and going in March to military college.
Wow.
Yeah. So he will be living away from home at that point full time.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying.
But he's got the confidence to do that because he's got a self-belief that there is nothing that he can't do. When he left school at the beginning of sort of year nine, we made a list of what the scariest things that he could ever do would be. And bungee jumping was one of the top ones. And he did that within 6 months of being out of school. We did a bungee jump. I say we, the royal we. I watched with the camera. But he did it. He was amazing. He got up there and he did it. You know, this weekend, he just did a zip wire off a 2,000-foot mountain.
Amazing.
At 70 miles an hour. They had to put a parachute on him to stop him from going so fast. You know, he has no fear now. He absolutely believes that he can achieve anything. And that's it, been in a really short period of time. And I really wish that I'd have found home education earlier, because he should never have gone to school, that child. My eldest one, fine for school, weirdly, given that he's autistic, really fitted in very well, really liked it. But Marley was not built for school. He's built for socialising. Very sociable.
Isn't that interesting that people who are very sociable often will struggle in school?
Yeah.
Funny that.
But it's not a social environment, is it? And that's another thing that comes up a lot, is people say, you know, how is he going to socialise? Well, he never socialised at school anyway. That wasn't where he learnt those skills. At school, he was told to shut up and stop talking. You know, you don't, when we're developing relationships with people, we don't constantly have interruptions where we're being told to shut up mid-conversation. That's not how we develop relationships with people. I didn't check before we started talking, Ellen, whether we're the same age. You know, is it appropriate to start a conversation if we're not the same age?
That's very true. I mean,
in life, what other time are you ever restricted to only speaking to people in one group?
Yeah, and it's not developmentally sound.
No. Like
from a child development perspective.
Yes.
You know, children develop best in a really rich environment of lots of different ages and lots of different cultures. Yeah.
Which is the old adage of it takes a village to raise a child, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you want as many different influences going into that. And when with my eldest child, when he was having home ed, I mean, I was really lucky. I was able to pull in my family and all of their skill bases, and they were completely behind it. So I've got an uncle who's an artist and he does a lot of woodwork. And Brad spent hours with him doing art and woodwork, and he built all sorts of stuff. And then I had a cousin who was just doing a hardware computer course at the time. So he was sharing everything he was learning, and they were building computers and taking them apart. And then my dad did religion. I did law and sort of psychology, and between us, his 15 hours of direct one-to-one structured education was so enriching. I mean, it was completely different to what I offered my younger child, which was there was no timetable, we kind of just did stuff as we went along. Yeah. With Brad, he really needed that structure, but the enriching process of having all of those people putting their 10 pence worth in, it was so valuable. Really valuable. And I suppose that's a benefit of school, is you've got all these different teachers and they all put their different viewpoint in. But in reality, I'm not seeing that as a professional in schools. I'm not seeing that teachers necessarily stand out from the crowd or particularly share their different viewpoints. I think it's all becoming very samey, and a lot of professionals are quite oppressed in their practice and staying within policy and trying to stay within the rules that keep changing are very difficult to stay within. I mean, as social workers, we've been told this week by our regulators that given the changes that are coming with the law, that we will have to make a decision whether we work for the government or whether we stand for moral duty.
That's not.
So they're basically telling us we're getting to a point where we're going to have to, as social workers, we're going to have to break the law if we want to be social workers.
Wow.
And that's our own regulator.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's a bit of a shit show, isn't it?
Yeah, absolute shit show.
So you being you, Izzy, you have managed to pretty much
blow your questions, sorry.
Like, all of my questions now. So what I do want to ask is, like, did you plan to follow a particular home ed style when it came to Marley coming out?
Yes, I did. Initially, I did what every parent did and stayed up all night printing shit.
Yeah.
But when I came to moving house a few weeks ago, packing a few weeks ago, I was like, fuck, what is all this paper? Why have I got all this paper? He hasn't looked at any of it. None of it has been used. So it's madness, really. So I did do that, but then quite quickly, as I said, I found Pip and Paula really quickly, and they did the whole read the guides, and I read the guides, and the guide that stood out to me the most was the unschooling stuff, and it really fitted with what I understand about child development, about what social workers are constantly trying to promote for children, this sort of child-focused, child-led, responsive opportunity for children. And what I'm finding actually when I go and now explain it in child protection conferences and child in need conferences, when I'm explaining it to chairs and social workers now who have been sort of outside of the home education system, and you fit it in with what we know as social workers, all the different theories and research and evidence about what children need, you really can't get a better opportunity than home education, can you?
You can't.
Because there's so many different styles of doing it that you're literally fitting it to your child and to yourself to a certain degree. But also, I think it's a massive learning thing for parents, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Like, I've got, my eldest is nearly 20 and they didn't come out of school until they were 11 because I didn't know until 6 months previous to that that was even a thing I could do, right? It is one thing. And your listeners, you will hear me repeat this often throughout the podcast. I really wish there was a little tick box on the applying for school forms when your kid is four that says, oh, you could home ed if you like.
Yes.
Just that little tick box.
Yeah. Or just somebody amazing. to tell us, because actually as a professional who's worked in services for 25 years, the view has always been it's lazy parents who can't be bothered to take their kids to school who do home ed. It genuinely has. And now when I think about, I mean, there's loads of myths that I've lived by that I now think about and go, fuck was that about? Sorry. That was an F word. Sorry.
You've already done it about three times. But
it just, sorry, potty mouth. Can't help it. Frontline work. You say what you see. I lost my thought now. Process. Sorry. Perimenopause. Brain.
So I was saying that, you know, having someone tell us that you could home ed and you were talking about.
Yeah. So we live by all these different myths, really strange myths, like one that I use a lot, you know, this whole, you're in charge of your own body, you can consent, and parents uphold that. And parents would always uphold that children consent with their own body. And then they force them to kiss Auntie Hairy Lip. What's that about? Mixed message. So we're told all these myths. We have children who are harmed because they're too polite, because it's more important to be polite than protective in this day and age. It's more important to fit in, especially if you're English, than to stand out. We all just want to fit in. But these myths have been really unhelpful to children. And there's lots of mixed messages in school as well, but there's lots of mixed messages that parents have absorbed. And as parents, we believe that professionals know best. We believe when we're given this bundle of joy that's perfect, that's untarnished by the world, you know, that actually we're going to break it if we don't listen to all the people who know what they're talking about. And we've almost medicalized parenting, which has made it really difficult. I mean, 50 years ago, okay, parenting wasn't great. We used to beat kids. And okay, there was times that there wasn't examples of great parenting, but there were also examples of great parenting. And actually, when you look at what the causes are that interfere with fantastic parenting, it's society's stuff, isn't it? It's the stuff that humans didn't really need. It's social construction.
Yeah.
It's the fact that if one of you don't go to work, if one of you is a stay-at-home mum, that's not a valuable job. That's not valid in this society. You are lesser than everybody else because you don't want to work. What do you do all day? What do you mean? What do I do all day? You know, actually, lots of things. And this idea of home edding being lazy families, I mean, what a joke. When you actually think about what it takes to successfully connect with your child and actually just being around them all the time. I mean, Christ, most of us don't want to parent our kids all day.
Yeah.
Most of us are quite happy with the childcare system that's being provided because that's what it is. It's not education. Things are being taught. It doesn't matter whether they're learnt. And that's the difference between home ed and school.
Yes. And that's the different standards we are held to as well. Because, see, this is why I can't talk to Izzy, because we both get on a soapbox. But in school, you have a responsibility to offer an education to a child. And that it's up to that child whether or not they receive it. And it's up to the parent to take action if the child is not receiving it.
Yes. Right? If they're not engaging.
Yeah. Whereas
child didn't engage. How about you were so bloody boring they didn't want to engage? How about you engage them as a professional because you're taught to do that? How about take some professional responsibility? I hate that. I really challenge. Whenever I've had so many cases land on my desk and the social workers who have passed it to me have said, oh, we've tried to engage them, but they won't engage. No, you failed. You failed to engage them. They don't want to engage with you. Why would they want to welcome you into their house? You know, in schools, why would I want to sit still for an hour at a time listening to a boring teacher go on and on about things that are completely irrelevant to my present and future?
Yes.
You know, how many times have you used algebra since you left school?
See, now my husband does use algebra on a daily basis, but he's an engineer.
Good. And so he could have gone down a pathway that would have allowed him to study that because it was appropriate for his brain. Yeah,
right.
I just needed to know how to pay my taxes. That was all. I just need to know how to. I'm paying my accountant quite a lot to do stuff that actually I feel fearful of because school didn't prepare me for the real world.
Yes.
Yes. You know? And that's costing me money.
Yes. So back to my point, which was the school gets held in a different regard in relation to the local authority than home edders do. Because home edders, although the guidelines and the law states that we are responsible ultimately, there is this element that is creeping in more and more of proving ourselves.
Yes, but again, the standards around proof are wishy-washy. And who is measuring these? So when we look at the people who are being sent out to measure whether or not your education is suitable for your child, what are their qualifications to do that? And I don't mean necessarily a degree, but how are they qualified to judge what's right for your child?
Yeah.
Because the law doesn't allow them to meet your child. The law doesn't allow them to make an assessment of your child. Your law didn't allow you to have the same person assess them last year. So the assessment would then be inconsistent, wouldn't it, if it wasn't the same person every year? Because how would they be assessing that progress? They're still relying on us. So in reality, the reports are not necessarily always a reflection of what's actually going on in the home education-wise. They're a fobbing off tool sometimes, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because actually, and this is again really unfair, if their assessment tool is parents writing a report, actually what we're doing is allowing parents who do really well in writing reports, like the kids at school who do well in exams, to succeed.
Yep.
And the parents who don't do so well are expressing themselves in a report but actually are doing a fantastic job at home edding but can't demonstrate that and present it in a way that professionals are happy with, their child is going to be assessed as not having a suitable education. That's not fair, it's not just, it's not accurate assessment.
Yeah.
You can't collect data in that way and be saying that the policy doesn't fit what we're trying to achieve. You know, if we want children to have a good education, the way we're doing it isn't, the systems around that aren't working at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And, you know, that's why for us in HEFA, like, if people do want to have visits or phone calls and things, that's completely their right. All that we task ourselves with is making sure that everybody has informed choice.
Well, my concern about people allowing a stranger into their home is this idea, again, that professionals know best.
Yeah.
And actually, this is an area where professionals can piss off. And I'm saying that as a professional. You know, when I walk into somebody's home, I'm not going to be arrogant enough to believe that I know better about what's going on in their home than they do.
Yeah.
So if we're going to have a snapshot visit of half an hour, how could we possibly have an accurate assessment from that? I mean, I do assessment with foster carers, and we're given, the law now has been restricted. We have to be at panel within 8 months of starting that assessment, of their inquiry. Right. So the first 4 weeks after their inquiry, we're faffing about getting paperwork before I even meet them. And then it could take a couple of weeks to find an independent social worker to do it. So it's 6 weeks into that process. So you're lucky if you've got 3 months to assess that family to decide whether or not to put somebody in there. Now, I've been trained in risk assessment and sort of spotting behaviours and signs. 4 years, I've worked in prisons, I've worked with young offenders, I've worked with paedophiles, anything you think of. So that is where my training lies, where my expertise lies. I don't feel equipped in 3 months, which is effectively 12 visits, to say whether or not a child is going to be safe in that home long term.
Yeah.
So how on earth, if we think about the safeguarding stuff that we're now talking about with this new homeschooling bill, you know, how on earth would somebody who's not trained in those fields, who doesn't understand child development, who effectively might be a family support worker, a TA, doesn't necessarily even have that professional capacity that we apparently all really hold in high esteem, that's really important, they don't have that. So what are we letting them into our houses for? I found it really interesting yesterday, there was a lady, I don't know, are we allowed to talk about posts that were on the page? Or is that a bit close to the bone? A
bit close to the bone.
Okay, let me try and generalise it. sometimes people who come to the home who are untrained, and when I say untrained, I include teachers in this, because teachers aren't trained to consider what baggage they bring to the table when they enter a situation, whereas I spend a lot of time thinking, okay, what am I bringing to the table here? Why do I feel uncomfortable with this? Is this about me? Is this about them? Are they done something? Am I bringing something with me? So when a professional comes into your house and they're carrying this baggage of views, some of which they've been highly influenced by myths, and they're also influenced by the fear of needing to stay within the status quo, stay underneath their management radar, do what they're told, successfully tick off the amount of visits that they've done. You know, there's targets to be met. They've got all these pressures and they've got their own personal viewpoints, but they don't have the professional standards to say you can't make a judgment, you have to make an assessment of the reality. So why would I wouldn't trust a social worker to come in my house, to be honest, if I'm really honest. I wouldn't invite them in. A bit like vampires, you know, keep them on the doorstep. But no, I'm joking. There are some circumstances where it's better to let them in. But personally, I wouldn't be allowing anybody to come and visit my child. After I pulled him out of school, after he was excluded from school, he was so damaged by that system that there was no way any professional was going to go anywhere near my child. I hadn't protected him as it was. I felt like a failure. I felt absolute guilt and continue to, and probably always will, that I even sent him to a school where that happened to him. There was no way I was going to expose him to any further professionals, in inverted commas, because these people are damaging if they're coming from a position of thinking that they know better.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. I literally put a post on, I think yesterday or today, about, you know, a reminder that local authority BODs are office workers employed by the council to do a particular job.
Yes.
And some of them might be ex-teachers or ex-TAs, or they might hold relevant experience in working with children. Yeah. But not very few of them will have deep understanding of, you know, different educational approaches.
Yes.
Very few of them will have deep understanding of home education and the many ways it happens.
Yeah.
They have to appear to understand it.
Yeah. And to be fair, as a social worker, I've worked with loads of families who home ed, and I've always been massively impressed by them, actually. When I remember this one woman who opened the door with a child hanging off her boob and seven other children being educated in different rooms doing different things, and she was just managing it all. And I walked out of there feeling like, I really need to get a grip of my life. I feel like I'm not very, I'm failing. Like, this woman is amazing. And her kids were amazing. They were spot on. But I had a surface level understanding of what was going on there. And now I would look back and go, actually, my assessment of that situation was inaccurate. Because how could I possibly know? I didn't have the time to really dig into what home education was about. And actually, as social workers, we rely very heavily on other professionals. Our job is to kind of collate all the information from everyone else and then analyse all of that. What does it mean? So I would rely on teachers for education. I would rely on health visitors for health, or nurses for health. I've learned over the years that they all bring their own baggage and their own perspective, and that there isn't a standard response to each situation. Families are grey areas. We can't write a law for everything. We can't have a policy for everything. And common sense is massively lacking.
I love that. I love that very succinct rounding up.
Yeah.
What do you wish you knew when you started home ed?
I think I'd go back even further than that. I wish I'd known before he went to school, my youngest. I really wish I'd have learned more from my first and recognised what my second one needed, and been able to execute that. I think the biggest thing I wish I'd have realised at the beginning of home ed this time was that I shouldn't have spent any money. I spent loads of money on absolute crap. And some of it was great. Some of it's been really useful, like the CGP stuff online, Maths Buster, that was great. And we used some tutors for different stuff, and that was great. But me printing off document, I mean, this idea of worksheets, I don't know what I was thinking. I think I was in panic mode or something. And I just thought, I need to provide him with structure and routine and all this crap that we've been told that kids need, when actually we've imposed those things because we need them for society as adults to be able to survive within the world that the canary on producing.
And actually what's really interesting is that teachers in schools generally do not use worksheets.
No. Well, some of them do. The supply teachers do.
Supply teachers do. But
But
know,
no,
there is
good
a lot
teachers
of
don't.
collaborative classroom discussion and hands-on stuff as much
Yeah.
as humanly possible, because you know teachers know how children learn best. They're just
Yes.
stuck in this yuck system that doesn't want them to do the things
Absolutely.
that they do really well.
Yes. Yeah. And I think as professionals, they then have a choice, don't they? They have to either break under that system trying to fight it to do the right thing for children and burn out, and then we lose them that way. Or they have to self-preserve, and that means just going along with the status quo. And I think we see that across the board: police, hospitals, doctors, nurses. You know, you get that GP occasionally who goes, "Stuff the 3.5 minute rule. You're staying here for 15 minutes. We've got a chat to have." You know, you get that occasionally, don't you? Not very often, but I do hear about it from clients. And then you get
It
the other
does
ones
happen.
who, you know, they walk in and they disclose sexual abuse, and they still only get 3.5 minutes and a load of antidepressants. You go, "Ah, what are you doing?" So I think home ed is really useful for families to start questioning everything,
Yeah.
because I think we need to. We're in a really, I'm going off on a tangent now, but we're in a really precarious position as human beings at the moment. Environmentally, politically, our context is very wobbly. I don't think I need to say that. I think everybody's fairly aware of that. Even those people who have been trying to avoid it are
Yeah.
fairly aware of how precarious our political system is at the moment. But in terms of laws that are coming in, we are moving to a fascist state, and that's really concerning for me. And I think for home edders are going to be one of the groups that kind of push to maintain and sustain some of our freedoms for our children. Really important freedoms, because actually, home edders aren't generally norms. They're the people who are thinking outside the box. They're the people who are going to be willing to challenge. They're the ones teaching their kids to analyse. And we need kids analysing. We don't need kids following rules anymore. That's not an
Yeah.
anarchist kind of view. That's just,
No.
actually, if we're going to survive and we're going to uphold a democracy, we need people who are going to challenge when there's not a democracy. And we haven't got that really at the moment. We
We
need more
haven't.
children to feel that confidence.
Yeah. And you, for those of you who have a mixture of children in school and home educated like I do, you can still instill a lot of those things into your children
Absolutely,
who are
yes.
in school.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm not denying that. And I went to school, and my
Yeah.
dad was very, I mean, I was the awkward kid at school. I'm sure you're not surprised by that. Everybody else had Bros on the walls. I didn't even know who Bros was. I was all about Kate Bush, right? So you can imagine, and dressed a bit like her as well. So everyone really hated me. And I was the person who used to ask really annoying questions in class. So I was excluded from a Catholic school at 8. Because I'm going to share this because I think it's funny. And it sort of shares a bit of my character, really. But it came from my dad, who questioned everything. We'd been praying week after week. I was an 80s child, for the Ethiopian children who were starving. Do you remember the starving children in Ethiopia? Week after week, every mass, we'd be praying for them. And eventually, I went into confession and just said, "I don't really get what the praying's doing, because week after week, they still appear to be starving." I'm thinking maybe a more practical approach, like we could sell some of the gold in this church, send them some actual food. Not a popular idea. I mean, I tend to be pragmatic. But in a church, in a Catholic church, a very Catholic church, that didn't go down very well. And that's kind of been,
Surprising.
yeah, unsurprising, really. But my dad has always pushed that. So at 8 years old, half of my pocket money was going to the Freedom for Nelson Mandela Fund. You know, I that was a that's one of the biggest events of my childhood, was him being released from prison,
Yeah.
which most people would be like, "Oh my God, what a geek." But that was my interest as a kid, and that came from dad, regardless of the fact that I was in school. And actually, it pushed me harder being in school, because it used to really delight me, the panic on teachers' faces when I'd say something like, they'd go, "And the Nazis in their concentration camps," and I'd be like, "That, sir, I'm not going to discuss the Boer War, where the British and Dutch used concentration camps. That was prior to the Second World War, was it, sir?" And you'd just see the panic on it. I used to love that. And I still
Yeah,
love
me
that. That's
too.
why I'm good in court. Because I just like to chuck a question in, and they all go, "Shit." But we need to do more of that. And I think in the home ed community, I see a lot of that going on. I see a lot of questioning. And I think it doesn't matter whether your kids are in school or not from that perspective, as long as you're able to do it. But the fact that we're open to not always using services if they're not appropriate for our child shows that we're thinking. We can still use those services. It's not like I never will go to the doctors again. I don't trust doctors particularly. I think certain doctors have got an agenda. But that doesn't mean that if I had a lump tomorrow, I wouldn't go and use their mammogram machine to check out what that might be. Doesn't mean I'd necessarily take their medicine, but there are uses to each service that we have and each system that's in place. When it started, when all of these systems started, they were really valued. And yeah. When they worked a little bit better, when people were really keen to make them work. But the reality is things don't work as well now. And so we have to look at the other options for our children to get the best for them.
Yeah.
And as a community, about, right? We do that.
Yeah. That's exactly what Home Ed's about. It's yeah. about every single parent who kind of either has already questioned and gone, I'm not sure that system's right for my child, or has seen something happen or experienced something with their child and gone, I think, and it's not necessarily about, I think I can do a better job.
No.
Sometimes it's about, I think I need to remove you for your own safety and well-being.
Yes.
And
yeah.
then we'll work on
well, and
working
also,
the rest out.
We've got this kind of assumption as a society now. I get a lot of referrals for children with anxiety disorder. Anxiety is not a disorder. It's not a medical issue. It's an appropriate response to the world that we've created. And if you're not anxious sometimes in this world, and if you're not verging on feeling quite anxious quite a lot of the time at the pace that we're living, with the expectations on us that we have, with the pressures that exist in society now, which we've constructed, then actually there's something wrong with you. I'd be worried that you might be on the verge of psychopathy, to be honest. Yeah. So these responses that children are having to their environment are spot on. And yet we still seem to be thinking that they're poorly and that they're doing that somehow they're broken and they don't fit. No, society's broken. They are not broken. They're responding absolutely appropriately how they should.
I wish you guys could see me. I'm kind of air punching and like getting really excited in my chair listening to Izzy on her soapbox because I love it. However, we are 5 minutes over our 30
Sorry.
Minutes.
Oh gosh, that always happens
it's
with
okay.
me. Bobby. I did tell you
it's
that
okay.
would happen. Didn't swear loads though. And I didn't drop a C-bomb. I'd just like to get a gold star or something for that.
You do get a gold star for that.
Thanks.
I think you've kind of covered biggest challenges, what you wish you knew, all of those kinds of things. Can you succinctly give me, I love that I've just, you know, succinctly, Izzy.
Yeah.
Succinctly give me just one piece of advice for our listeners.
I think it would be parenting advice, really, across the board for all parents, which is to trust yourself. Nobody loves your kid more than you do.
Yes.
Nobody loves your kid more than you do. Yes, okay, I've come across parents who have done stupid stuff. Absolutely, I have. And I've had to remove children into safety, which is a horrific thing to have to do. But in reality, I have never in 25 years met a parent who did not love their child. You love your kids more than anything, and you know best most of the time.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that we don't take advice from other people, but don't if your gut is telling you something, your child needs something, you go with your gut. You don't listen to anybody else.
Yeah.
And that's
and
the
I
same
would,
when you take your kid
to
hospital
that,
or whatever.
And I would just add a slight bit to that, which is that we have been conditioned for quite a long time now that giving into your gut around your children is unhealthy. I just want to remind you that we have a literal biological function to protect
yes.
our children.
Yes. Well, and to protect ourselves.
And to protect
because actually
ourselves.
We've also taught our children to ignore that gut feeling. And this is why a lot of people are making bad choices about the associations that they have, because we have taken away their skills, their innate ability to be able to risk assess a situation. Don't be rude. I don't care that your stomach's churning. Go and kiss your granny.
Yeah. There is something for you to chew on, my friends. I knew this was going to be a good one.
Sorry. I told you I'd go on too long, didn't I?
Now you're all good. Okay. Thank you so much, Izzy.
No worries.
For those of you listening, Izzy is one of our specialist admin in HEFA. She helps us with all things social services, social work, you know, things like if you've got what's it called? The the thing that comes before child in need plan.
Oh, child, oh, EH, oh, early help.
Early help. Yeah. Things, you know, like early help's involved or child in need plan.
Or therapeutic, actually. Most of my work is therapeutic, although yes. I do a lot of legal work for people, fighting children's services on all sorts of issues. A lot of my work is therapeutic, direct one-to-one work with children. That's my favourite.
Yes, yes. So she knows what she's talking about, basically.
I wouldn't go that far. I know how to talk. I think we've confirmed that.
Thank you so much for joining us.
No worries.
And we will see you all next week for another episode. If you need to know where to find Heifer, you can find us on the Facebooks and the Twitters and
Instagram.
You find us Instagram and the web as well. You can find us at Home Education for All. Until next time, we will see you later.